south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
You know, everyone's looking for quick and dirty ways to learn their Spanish, and now there's all those language apps for smartphones, too. Some of you listeners have probably seen them, where you speak English into your phone and the phone spits it out in Spanish and vice versa. Well, you know, that's become more than a crutch with so many gringos and expats coming down here to Latin America thinking that's the greatest thing since sliced bread. But what about those things, really? Let me tell you, it's a fact you're never going to learn your Spanish that way. Just like young kids and millennials cannot add, subtract, or multiply without their trusty calculators or cash registers at Starbucks or McDonald's that compute your change automatically. You gotta ask yourself what happens when the power goes out or the batteries die. Then you're back to roughing it. I mean, really roughing it. So with that thought in mind, someone sent me this very interesting essay on why gringos and expats just can't learn Spanish, even when they've been down in Latin America for who knows how many years. And you know, I've never quite heard it put this way before, but man, is it spot on. Listen to this. And as usual, I'll edit and paraphrase as we go along. Simply because if I drone on and it gets too boring, you'll switch to another podcast, right? Wouldn't want to lose you just when things are getting interesting, you know? It's called Punished by Translation. And it starts, man, is it stress to learn a foreign language. In fact, I don't know anyone who's ever learned to speak his own language, English, from a textbook with grammar lessons, memorizing and being tested with quarterly exams. In fact, it's been proven over and over again. Conversational English and Spanish just cannot be learned by studying books, courses, or DVDs. Turns out, but no one ever admits it, you pick up a language best thanks to situational difficulty. That means from error to error, when you need to communicate under more or less straining or stressful circumstances. That's how you learn your Spanish, believe me, particularly to express urgent needs. For example, like ordering in a restaurant or asking for directions. That would include going to a doctor or a hospital, hitting a pharmacy, buying a phone and trying to figure out how it works, and trying to communicate what might be the most stressful situation of all, having to find a somewhat comfortable place to sit it out during an attack of Montezuma's revenge. Yes, the way we learn new words in our own mother language, anyway, is not by studying, memorizing, or going through the dictionary and writing words down. We essentially learn to communicate by being forced to read the minds of other persons as they wave their hands, make noises in a foreign language, and try to explain something to us. That's the trial by fire. So how do you get on that bandwagon? Well, number one, you definitely have to suspend your own fear of making mistakes and thinking you're looking like a fool in front of the next guy. So as it turns out, first world people with all their success, wealth, and technology are trying to make that time-tested trial and error method on how to learn a language obsolete. The thought being, if it's newer and more high-tech, it must be better. Then he says, in fact, just a few years ago, when asked to speak at events in foreign countries, the organizers of those events back then would never think to assign a fawning bilingual translator travel assistant fully fluent in Facebook and Twitter English, but that's what you get today if you're a gringo speaker doing a conference tour through Latin America. These days, it's vastly different. You could do the whole tour and never speak a word of Spanish. So, just a few years ago, if you were a gringo speaker in Latin America, you had to force yourself to fend for yourself. Hence, picking up a vocabulary by finger-pointing, trial and error, and just looking stupid, like a retarded adult with a child's brain. Back then, there were no convenient handheld devices. There were no electronic spell-checking bilingual dictionaries, no Google Translate, no apps, no nothing. But now, with all that tech, we're actually punished as first-world people and don't even know it, simply because we have the privilege of being able to afford all those new devices. They comfort us. They make us feel good, like we're in control and are actually learning Spanish. And you know, we can't resist new devices, especially when we're told we need them. They'll make us learn our Spanish faster. After all, we don't want to be left behind as tech rolls on. Let's face it, if you're fluent in English and nothing else, and you meet a person who speaks nothing but Spanish, and he greets you with a sign at the airport with your misspelled name on it, worse yet, that person picking you up at the airport, ready to drive you to your hotel or whatever, will translate every little thing for you and will babble on in his imperfect English, wanting to practice it on you. That's his job, you know, to make it easy for you so you don't have to struggle through Spanish. And you know, after you've been laid over and delayed in three different airports, you don't want to hear a guy sitting next to you in the car all the way to the hotel babbling on about his great dream to visit Disney World someday. Now, some very intelligent people I've spoken to say the best way to learn Spanish is to have a Spanish spouse, girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever. One who knows no English at all. So you'll be forever forced to play charades with him or her. And that means trying to get your point across, acting out words and phrases in the craziest ways. But it does work. So in the first few weeks anyway, that means lots of frustrated hand gestures and weird body language. But you know, I think the very best way to learn Spanish, and he says I have a few good friends who will vouch for this technique, is to spend a few weeks in a Latin American jail. Better yet, being stuck in the ward of a Latin American hospital way off the tourist trail where no one speaks English. But sadly, in the last few years, when you're in a foreign country, there seems to be this disease some people call touristification. Yep, touristification developed as a fine art first in the country of Costa Rica. So what's that all about? Well, when local Latins have decided that every gringo is highly predictable in the smallest detail, and so the tourist agencies, hotel personnel, and virtually everyone on the tourist trail have developed a kind of a universal punch card bucket list for all of us, as if we all were exactly the same and want the very same experiences out of our Latin vacations. Of course, Latins all think we're loaded and the streets are paved with gold in my jammy, but that's a given, right? Anyway, there's a big reason you'll never learn your Spanish on the tourist trail, because the locals, all geared up for tourism, eager to rake in those dead presidents, have got us down to highly predictable elements in the smallest details. And it starts with your flight, before you even land at your chosen Latin destination. For example, they know all us gringos want comfort, convenience, and efficiency, and they strive hard to give it to us in their own particular imperfect Latin way. So unfortunately, when you're on the gringo tourist trail, the locals have turned your travel experience into the equivalent of a cookie-cutter script, essentially sucking the last drops of randomness and adventure out of your vacation experience, while providing you with some kind of illusion that you've actually been to a pristine natural wonder. But it's better than CGI, almost. You probably know the drill. Schedule this, schedule that. This nature preserve to see the sloths, that garden paradise to see those wild butterflies mating, but it's mostly contrived. It's a setup, it's canned, pre-planned and arranged for the gringo tourist. Everything translated in English, of course, including all the restaurant menus, tourist brochures, and warnings in your hotel bathroom not to drink the water and not to throw the towels on the floor unless they're dirty. Because, you know, in our little piece of paradise, we're so ecologically conscious. Meanwhile, in your four-star hotel, there are no windows on the west side of the building because there's a stanky gray water river clogged up with plastic bottles and bags. Not quite the view we want our gringo tourist to wake up in the morning to. Anyway, it boils down to the fact that you're never going to learn your Spanish if you're on the gringo tourist trail. And if you download all those nice, convenient language apps, you'll never learn conversational Spanish either. Oh, but those PR and marketing gurus selling this stuff will convince you it's a breakthrough. It's all new. You could do it in half the time. You just got to have it. And deep inside, we all love to cut corners, and we're all optimists, so we want to believe progress and technology are good. And at $49.95, what a steal. But for the moment, in an effort to learn Spanish, I'm against it. However, I do know in a very short time, in the very near future, there will be some kind of earbud device connected to Wi-Fi that instantly does all the translations for you. That will be the real language game changer. Unfortunately, that could be 3 to 5 years off, so until then, if you want to learn conversational Spanish, you're going to have to do it with one of the only 3 foolproof methods available. Number 1, full family immersion, and not just for a week either. That means at least a month and no hanging out at gringo bars. Number 2, having that Latino girlfriend or boyfriend that speaks absolutely no English. Number 3, get yourself thrown in a Latin slammer for a couple of weeks. Oh, and then there's that bonus option of being admitted for an extended period of time to a Latin hospital. Oh, and don't forget, a hell of a lot depends on your Latin country destination, too. So what's it going to be, the polished, plastic-groomed paradise of Costa Rica or the rough, adventurous edges of Peru, Bolivia, Guatemala, Salvador, and all the other places the U.S. State Department has on its list? Okay, me, Johnny here. I'm telling you, there's a lot of truth there. And really, who isn't waiting for that magic earbud translator? And who wouldn't pay 500 or even 1,000 bucks for one? Well, it is coming. It's probably going to be dirt cheap as an app. Man, just think what that'll do for Latin American tourism. In fact, I can see travel agencies and airlines giving the app out for free. But alas, it's not here yet. And exactly when you're going to be able to avail yourself of that technology, well, I don't know, because my crystal ball's in the shop. Meanwhile, I've been getting deluged with emails from Canadians talking about various tax problems they're having regarding, of course, their tax status as they leave the Great White North and head to Latin America. Now, the one I'm going to read and comment on right now is quite interesting because it's not just about boring tax issues, as you'll see. And this one comes from very long-time listener P.T. Marcos. You know, P.T. stands for Permanent Traveler or Perpetual Tourist, meaning someone who was smart enough to get out of Dodge a long time ago. Anyway, PT starts out by saying, Johnny, been enjoying your recent programs as always. However, the one about tax treatment of Canadian expats caught my attention in particular, as I've been through the whole hand-wringing, head-banging process myself. First of all, I'd say the determination of legal tax status in Canada is a little more complicated than your sources and stories have indicated. To get an idea of what's involved, do an internet search on the term, quote, NR73-17E, unquote. And this will take you to a page on the Revenue Canada website that is called, quote, Determination of Residency Status. If you click on that link, the one labeled NR73-17E, then you will see a four-page form that asks many, many, many questions, which the Government of Canada will use to determine if you are a domestic or foreign tax resident. As I understand it, there is some judgment involved on the part of tax agents who process this form. So it could depend on who's reviewing your form, if he's a jerk or a nice guy, has a hangover, or his hockey team won or lost the playoffs. Meaning it's not 100% objective. They do not use any simple criteria, it looks like, to determine your tax residency status, as your sources suggested in the past. But instead, they seem to look at one's profile as a whole. Now, Johnny, one of your sources that you mentioned in the show also said it would be a good idea to avoid countries that have tax treaties with Canada. But these tax treaties are actually a good thing, assuming that you are going the legal route. This is because the purpose of treaties is to avoid double taxation, and they can actually lower your tax rate. For example, if you reside in a Latin country where I am, the tax treaty allows you to pay 15% on your Canadian pension income instead of the standard Canadian non-resident tax of 25%. This is not a bad thing. So different rates apply to different countries, and you can find these rates on that Revenue Canada website. But do be careful because they don't always tell you that in order to obtain the reduced tax rate for yourself after you're deemed a non-resident, that you will need to fill in one of those NR-31 forms and send it in to whoever pays your pension. Ouch! Look out for that. So there's incomplete information out there, and it seems that it's exactly what they want. So to take the edge off of all that, here's a Latin cop story that your longtime listeners will appreciate. A while back now, I was living on the outskirts of a small Latin coastal town that was having a fair and went on for a number of days. Every evening, I would walk through the fair on my way into town and nod hello to the police officer who was stationed at the entrance of the fairgrounds. Now, it just so happens that one evening, I had bought a bag of churros as I walked through the fair on my return trip. All right, me, Johnny here, let me explain what churros are. A kind of a greasy, deep-fried batter stick. Somewhat like long, skinny donuts, but 10 times greasier. They're deep-fried in some god-awful cheap-ass grease, and man, do they give me a stomachache, so I just don't eat them. Besides that, talk about instant artery cloggers anyway. P.T. Marcos continues. He says, "So I nodded hello to the police officer who was stationed at the entrance of the fairground. It just so happens, as I was walking home, I bought a bag of those churros and walked past the guy on my return trip. But there were way too many churros in a bag for me to eat, and my arteries are already plenty clogged." No, he didn't say that artery bit. That was me, Johnny. Anyway, he said, "So I gave the rest of them to the cop, who appreciated them greatly. Of course, I thought that would be the end of my good deed for the day, but when I walked by the very next night, he gave me a wave and a big smile and pointed to me to walk over, put his hand on my shoulder and said, 'You know what I'd really like today? A Coca-Cola.'" All right, it's me, Johnny, chiming in again. You know, Mr. P.T. Marcos, who sent this email, usually hangs around Mexico. Just to give you a little background here. Then he continues by saying, "What I'd really like to talk to you about, Johnny, is my salsa dancing experience with gringas." That's right, I said with gringas, not Latinas. "The fact is," P.T. Marcos says, "the whole damn thing has me mystified, and I'd really be interested to get your take on it. The way that salsa classes work is that the men and the women pair off, and there's a leader and a follower." Oh, and I'm talking about salsa classes given in Latin American countries. Anyway, guess who the leader is? Of course, the man. This is where the trouble begins. Not so much if your partner is a Mexican female, because then you often end up laughing together as you try to work out the step, and of course, step on her feet, which is par for the course. In fact, with a Latina, she'll always know the steps better than you, and will show you first, and then expect you to lead her. But you see, Johnny, the trouble starts when you have an older gringa lady as a partner. Some of them are very nice people, but what often happens is that you'll begin to practice a step, and she will look around the room to see what everyone else is doing. If you do happen to know the step well and you try to help her, she'll look for the instructor. If you actually try to continue dancing with her, she'll resist you at every turn, as if you're taking a wrestling class instead of a dance class. All right, me, Johnny, here again. You know, many moons ago, I took salsa classes here in Latin America. Like most gringos who end up down for a while, we think we better take some kind of dancing lessons because we're so terribly outclassed and outmaneuvered in that department. And like P.T. Marco says, the thing is, if you take salsa classes, you're in class with, surprise, surprise, a bunch of gringas, not Latinas. What do they need to take salsa classes for? And the only Latinas that show up are the instructors. Great dancers, of course, but they all seem to be older, motherly types. Oh, and beware of merengue and salsa classes where your teacher is an expat gringa. Now, this might seem prejudicial, and I don't know about you. I don't want to learn Latin dance steps from a gringa. You know, I don't care how good a dancer a gringa is. Most any Latina could wipe the floor with her balancing a basket full of tortillas on her head. Hey, don't laugh. I've seen that. Oh, and by the way, as for having a Latina dance partner, the thing is, with all their rhythm, syncopations, and moves, still they float like a feather on the dance floor. Just the slightest little movement, shove or push or even nod from their partner, and they instantly get the cue and they're off into another set of gravity-defying moves that few gringas can ever hope to copy. The fluidity is just not there. And sure, it's all about that 10,000-hour thing. Remember that concept? In short, it means any kind of activity, physical or mental, that you put 10,000 hours into will put you somewhere in the top 0.1% of all people performing that activity. In other words, after 10,000 hours of anything, you will be professional, the expert. And I'll tell you, Latinos and Latinas start their dancing moves at around 3 years old. And for the rest of their lives, they'll dance at the drop of a hat. So most of them have their 10K hours in before they even get out of high school. So all you gringas out there who think you've got some moves, just remember that. Anyway, P.T. Marcos was saying, when he was in a salsa class dancing with gringas, he felt he was in a wrestling class, not a dancing class. In fact, he says, when I first tried salsa lessons a number of years ago, one of the older gringas actually barked at me. She said, "You don't dance as well as the instructor." And she dumped me as a partner right there and went over to dance with the instructor, even though there was a line of other women waiting to dance with him. Talk about an ego-crushing experience. And it's true, I was just a beginner. But some time ago, I got back into salsa dancing again and got much better at it. And still had a similar experience. I was dancing with an older gringa once again, a very nice lady. But dancing with her was like dancing with a streetcar that resisted every step and turn I made. Soon I realized she was trying to lead me around and would only respond to the standard salsa signals if I used 10 times the force that you'd normally use with a Latina. Needless to say, this is not how you want to dance or learn how to dance, but it does offer good insight and lessons as to what you'll be up against if you join salsa classes yourself. Now, Johnny, if you think it's just me, that I'm just kind of a bullheaded jerk about all this, other dance students I've talked to, even the dance instructors, the Latinos, have verified this phenomena. In fact, one very patient Latino instructor explained that my experiences are common and that he earns his pay in spades whenever he dances with these gringo women. And even another instructor once gave me a devilish, knowing grin as he finished off with an older gringo lady and passed her on to me with a wink, as if to say, "Your turn with this one, pal. Good luck." So, Johnny, what do you think? What's the deal? Is this the uncompromising independence of newly arrived third world feminism rearing its ugly head on the dance floor? Are they creating a new post-feminist dance style here in Latin America, maybe? Is this why older single gringas have so much trouble in the dance and romance department in Latin America? I don't know. It's confusing to me. So, is this why I'm the only gringo male in the dance class, as a rule? Perhaps there should be special classes for older gringas in which they get to lead and are partnered with a special non-macho beta-type Latin male who, instead of leading on the dance floor, lets them push him around instead. So, what's happening? What are us normal males to make of all this? What do you think? Signed, P.T. Marcos. Well, thanks for that, PT, and I gotta tell you, when I took my salsa classes many years ago, the exact same thing happened to me. I was the only gringo in the class with about 10 older gringo ladies, a couple of younger ones too, and when I danced with them, they were stiff and pushy too. And I have to say, that experience left me kind of empty. After a few classes, I just didn't go back anymore. No, not because of those gringo ladies, but because I'm pretty much a lost cause in the dance department, and I know it. So let the truth be told that I probably haven't got my 10 hours in yet. However, over the years, I've been in many Latino dance clubs, and I'll tell you this. Every single Latin guy in the place who's not with his wife, girlfriend, or a date will hit on any gringa he happens to see in the bar. And to be with a gringa, he will tolerate pushing and shoving, leading and stiff-arming, because they're all into the conquista mood, and it's a huge feather in their hat if they can somehow worm their way into that gringa's heart, or places south of her heart. Because Latinos have it firmly imprinted into their mind that if they get a gringa to fall for them, or better yet, get one pregnant, that's their ticket, a legal green card ticket, to the first world. Of course, we all know the chances of that happening are mighty slim, but it does happen once in a while. I personally know of a few cases myself. In fact, I think probably couple hundred shows ago now, I told a nice but sad story of a young college-age gringa down in Costa Rica for a couple of months, fell in love with a handsome, young, lazy-ass Latino surfer dude. He knocked her up. She went back home to have the kid. Her parents practically disowned her. And the guy, well, it was obvious, his total objective was to have that so-called anchor baby, his guaranteed green card ticket to the U.S. Not to mention, in this case, her parents were quite wealthy, so in order to keep the guy from accomplishing his goal of going to the States with his lack of skills and hanging around their house like a parasite, the girl's father paid him to stay in Costa Rica. Yep, love conquers all, except when there's a lot of zeros on the check. So are we being cynical here, Johnny? Damn straight. Oh, and in regards to that part in P.T. Marcos's email where the cop tried to hit him up for a Coca-Cola after he gifted him a partial bag of churros the night before. Listen to this. Now, since my last Expat Insider seminar, 2 months ago now, I've been on a marathon trek through Latin America. And just about 3 or 4 days ago, I had my own little run-in with the cops. As it happens, around 11 o'clock at night, I was walking just a block away from my hotel, which is on the oceanfront, so a lot of cool places to explore. Friday night, a lot of people out walking and partying as they will in any beachfront town. And suddenly a motorcycle pulls up right on the sidewalk carrying two cops. I was standing about 10 feet away from where they parked their motorcycle. They were going to the local tienda to buy whatever. But the first thing they did was walk up to the gringo, because I'm off the gringo tourist trail, of course, and I'm really the only gringo within extortion distance, don't you know? So the first thing out of the skinny guy's mouth is, what are you doing here? And I said, stupidly, in Spanish, so they can understand me instead of playing the dumb gringo, I'm a tourist. They said, how long you down? Where you staying? Lots of questions. I said, I'm in that hotel right across the street. And they said, okay, show us your stinking papers. Or something like that, but nicer. And I said, well, they're in my hotel safe, right over there, across the street. And the fat guy said, that's against the law. You have to carry your passport. And I said, in Spanish, again, like a stupid gringo, no, you're wrong. On the American State Department website, it says, never carry your original passport with you or original documents. Keep them in your hotel safe. Then they looked at each other for a while as their pea brains began to churn. Then the fat guy says, if you have no identification on you at all, you have to pay a fine. And I said, okay, if you're going to give me a fine, you have to write me a ticket, right? He said, no, we'll take you right down to the police station ourselves. And in that moment, I thought, they can't do that. They've got two guys on a motorcycle. How are they going to take me to the police station? And I know I'm in the right anyway. So I said to the fat guy, look, let's walk right over to my hotel room. We'll go into the safe and I'll show you my passport. And at that moment, he had his back to the entrance to the hotel. So I said, look, that's my hotel right there. And I put my hand on his shoulder to try to move him in the direction so he could see the hotel. And he pulled his gun out like a macho guy. He said, nope, we're not going to your hotel. You're walking around without papers. It's a fine. And I said, how much? That's when I had him stumped because it looked like they just couldn't agree on an extortion figure. And I said, okay, how about 10 bucks? And that was the start of the negotiations. And they said 20. I was thinking they're going to say 50. And I thought for a second, 20 bucks, that's nothing. So I peeled out two tens in their funny money. And suddenly they're all friendly, giving me advice and telling me what tourist attractions to check out. And in the end, you're not going to believe this, they both gave me a genuinely warm hug. Yep, a hug. And you know how us gringos feel about hugs. They're always slightly uncomfortable. And you know, if you try it with a gringa, it could be the start of a sexual assault charge, right? But not in Latin America. Even corrupt cops will hug you. Wait a minute, did I say corrupt cops? Sorry about the redundancy. Are there any other kind? And the moral of that story? Sometimes it's best to play the dumb gringo, as good old John Galt used to say. Sorry, officer, no hablo espanaca. Oh, and there's more to that cop story. I see those guys every once in a while. They wave, come on over, and we chat a while like best friends. Man, it really seems now that 20 bucks bought me a pair of official bodyguards. And the funny thing is they never hit me up for any more dough because we're hugging buddies now. And I really think the reason why is because I'm south of the border, meaning not in Mexico. So in the end, was paying the bribe worth it to make two new, thoroughly corruptible friends? I don't know, but up in the States, what can you buy for 20 bucks? A couple of Domino's pizzas, maybe?
You've been listening to the Expat Files Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy.